Welcome to the Barbara Schulte Show with host Barbara Schulte and producer Ben Self. The Barbara Schulte Show brings conversations, stories, and tips intended to power up a writer's potential for more success, fun, and the confidence to ride and live with grace, courage, and the grit to never give up.
In this episode, I interview Paul Martinez and Amanda Bethards. Paul is a retired U.S. Army Ranger who served multiple tours in Afghanistan as a sniper. Amanda is a retired Navy medic. Since their return to civilian life, horses have been their lifeline. And I got to corral them while they were in Fort Worth with Brave Hearts for the NYCHA cutting shootout. They discuss calmness, trust, authenticity, and honesty with horses. Prepare to be inspired. Hey, Paul. Hey, Amanda. Welcome. We're just really excited that you're here today.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're excited to be here.
Well, so I have a question for you. So why horses and veterans? What's going on with the magic of that?
Well, it's kind of the perfect pairing, because I think a lot about like a Mustang. That's something uniquely American, and it's wild and it's free, but it kind of belongs to all of us, right? So we have this responsibility to it. And I think veterans very much the same way. Like, they're all ours, but they're a little bit wild and they're meant to be free. And I think we should look after them. Uh-huh. Horses don't really fit into most people's concept of daily life. They don't really understand why they're here or what they do or what they can do. And I think that veterans feel very much the same way. So on a fundamental level, they're similar in that sense. And I think that your approach to horses can mirror your approach to veterans. And then they help each other, of course, because of the way they are as a herd animal. And I mean, that's a long answer, but in short,
no,
I think that's kind of, from what I've finally learned, that's why I think they go together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think you put that into words great. That is kind of the, you know, million-dollar question. Why do these animals work so well for veterans? And there's just a special bond that we create and that we get from it. And it's almost hard to put it into words. So, I mean, I think you did a really good job putting it into words, but you know, it's that unspoken connection. You know, a lot of vets, you know, don't do well talking, you know, talking their feelings out, and, you know, being able to just be there and be in the moment and be present, and someone else be able to feel how you're feeling, and you don't have to say a word, you know, and then they react off of that. And so I've always, you know, horses keep me honest.
Yeah.
I can come in, hey, how's it going? Oh, I'm good. But then you get it in that stall, right, or you go to get on and your ride's not going well, or the horse's, you know, ears are up and their eyes are wide and everything's tense. Oh, okay, hold on. Let me take a big deep breath. Let me leave everything at the door.
Because you brought something to the equation.
Exactly.
That wasn't on paper. You know, you were kind of keeping it a secret. And I think when it's down to the actual interaction with the animal, that's really why it works, because you can't be dishonest. You have to be in the moment. I think it appeals to veterans because you do find a calming effect or a therapeutic effect or a sense of relief just by interacting with them. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to expose yourself to, you know, the shrink with the pen and paper and lay down on the couch. And a lot of us don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. That's a hard process to go through. Mm-hmm. It's hard work to do. So it makes it more accessible.
Absolutely.
I think. To
Absolutely.
Be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. How about the fun factor?
Yeah.
That's a whole other factor on its own, right? I mean, whole other factor. You know, the love of horses is just, some people like me come into it with that. And then some people have never been around a horse before at all. You know, they're like, oh, the horse at the merry-go-round. Yeah. Like, don't they just go in circles? And that's what a lot of vets will come out and they're like, I thought we were just going to walk around in circles. Like, that's what I thought they were going to have me do. So I was like, okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's that element of danger and speed and
that adrenaline rush.
The adrenaline rush, the fact that you're responsible for another living thing that's important. It's something that we're used to. It's something that we miss in our everyday lives when we come home. And being able to get a little bit of that, it feels good. Plus, you can't do horses alone. Like, I have to, like, me and Amanda, if we're neighbors and we have horses, we're going to have to interact. We're going to want to. We're going to need to. I mean, nobody does horses by themselves. Mm-hmm. They just don't. You always need somebody, whether it's a farrier or somebody to watch when you're on vacation or if you get sick and that's important.
Well, a lot of us veterans, that's what we search for when we come home, is that camaraderie. I haven't found it anywhere else, you know, with any other groups or anything. That nothing compares to what you got, you know, here with the horses and with fellow veterans and just everybody that's on the same page and here for the same reasons. And to have that, you know, you get it instantly when you're in the military. You are instantly given a certain level of respect based on your rank. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not questioned. You walk into a new duty station and you're instantly given that. But civilian world isn't like that. You know, nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows what your qualifications are. Nobody cares. So to come together with fellow veterans and then throw those horses in there and, you know, finding somebody to trust, you know, is a big deal for us, and being able to trust somebody and somebody to know that somebody's got your back, and the horse instantly does.
Yeah. And I think that's what attracts us to the horse community in general, is because we're finding most civilians, you live your life, you don't have a lot of skin in the game. I mean, life's pretty easy in the United States. So, but in the horse world, if you have horses, you know, like, you're kind of in a life or death business, your choices matter, and an animal may be hurt or suffer, or a rider may be hurt or suffer if you're not making the right choices. Or so that level of awareness and connectivity and just skin in the game. So when we meet civilians and they're into horses, we're like, okay, you get it.
Yeah.
So there's that automatic
hard work, that dedication that comes along with it.
So there's that automatic baseline amount of respect. Like, okay, I know that I can count on this person to this extent, and we can form our relationship predicated on that. And so it's natural.
So Brave Hearts really does an excellent job of that, wouldn't you say?
Oh, God, hands down, by no comparison.
The best.
Absolutely the best.
Yeah, I. They're really paving the way, I think, for what can be done. Because this is all new.
I think you guys should explain to everyone listening about Brave Hearts.
Where to start, where do we start, Paul?
Well, I can start.
Go, yeah.
My introduction to Brave Hearts was Trail to Zero. I was actually living in New York, and I was working with a harness trainer, and he said, "Hey, have you heard about this? They're going to ride in New York. This is our backyard. Like, they're doing veterans. We got to do this." So Trail to Zero is a 20-mile ride in select cities to raise awareness about veteran suicide. And we called up Megan and said, "Hey, you know, we'd like to support you in any way we can. You know, we know a lot of horse people here in New York. You're going to need some resources. What can we do?" And she was already extremely organized, so she didn't really need us that much. You know, we brought some volunteers to her that were helpful. We were able to lighten the load a little bit with some extra hands. But she invited me to ride along with her. And we reached millions of people in that week we were in New York. I mean, we were on TV and then handing out things on the street during the ride itself. And being able to reach that many people, you know, every other person that you talk to, they're like, "Oh, what are you guys doing?" "Oh, veteran suicide. Didn't know it was a thing. Now they do." So, and somebody somewhere saw that. They saw us on TV or they saw us on the street, and it at least got them thinking that, you know.
Well, and it just transpires, you know. I mean, you know, then the folks that do all the heavy lifting on the back end, I mean, they're getting hundreds of emails from people, and it's not just veterans, but it's their wives, you know, their kids, their siblings, you know, somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody. There's always a connection to a veteran somewhere. And that's what's so amazing is, you know, if we could just reach one person, that's my goal for the day. If I can just meet one person and expose them to what Brave Hearts does, and that there is somebody there that cares, and there's somebody there that's willing to put in the work and go the extra mile. And Brave Hearts goes above and beyond. I mean, way above and beyond. I was introduced to Brave Hearts from a fellow veteran, literally in the grocery store. With my husband and my kids, and my husband had a jacket on that said veteran on it, and he just walked right up and said, "Hi, my name's Bill. Are you a veteran and do you like horses?" And it just took that one person, though, to make such a big difference in my life, in the grocery store of all places. You know, and so we just went out for the Veterans Day event that they were having, and that was 2017. And I mean, I started out volunteering there, and you know, there's something therapeutic about mucking stalls. You don't even have to be on a horse, but you know, volunteering, and then found that I could ride twice a week completely free of charge. An hour lesson twice a week with a trainer, completely free of charge, and I could bring a child with me. And my husband's also a veteran, so my whole family got to come out, and that was a whole new place, a whole new environment. You know, to unplug. I'm a big advocate for Braveheart's family aspect of things, and my kids can come out and there's no phones, there's no social media, there's nothing like that. And okay, here's a broom. You know, hey, go fill this water bucket. And they're happy to do it. You know what I mean? There's something satisfactory about a good hard day's work. Like putting in that manual labor and knowing, like, yes, it's free. Mm-hmm. But these horses aren't free. These facilities aren't free. I mean, these horses get top-notch care. None of it's free. So mm-hmm. being able to pay it forward is a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. And it's just an amazing organization. Yeah. Everybody, it's contagious. You know, just you can't be unhappy and be around these folks. I mean, it's absolutely, you can't. You really can't.
Yeah, and that's the vision of Brave Hearts. That's why it was founded. It's to bring the opportunity to see how horses can heal you and connect you to all veterans free of charge. And mm-hmm. they do that through riding instruction, horsemanship instruction, the Trail to Zero. They did a Mustang gentling. The shootout that we're doing here. Mm-hmm. I mean, Megan is extremely creative and passionate about horses. And there's a lot of different ways that sort of fit into that. Mm-hmm. So
then, Paul, you did the Trail to Zero, and do you go to Illinois? Brave Hearts is in northern Illinois, just south of the Wisconsin border, not that far from Chicago. Yep. So do you go?
I go to the events. I do the a couple Trail to Zeros any chance I get.
And that's it, though. Like, Brave Hearts gets to reach people nationwide. So, you know, Paul's here from New York. You know, we've got Victor from California.
Yep.
Brenda Lee's what, in Oregon?
Yeah, she's in Oregon.
So, and again, you know, they're flown in here free of charge. You know, everything's covered.
That's amazing.
Well, and it's cool because, I'll learn stuff with Brave Hearts at a clinic or, you know, on a Trail to Zero, just
virtual events with COVID. They were awesome with virtual events.
And then, you know, I take it back to the programs that I do in New York. Mm-hmm. And
we pay it forward, and we try to, you know, we mm-hmm. try to teach somebody else. Mm-hmm. We did a clinic not too long ago with you, Barb. You came out to the Brave Hearts in Poplar Grove. Same thing. So, you know, we've got instructors that were in those classes. You got other students like myself that are studying to become instructors. So now you're not just touching the 20 people that were there, but everybody that I'm going to teach and everybody that those instructors are going to teach, we've now just spread all mm-hmm. of that knowledge out. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody that Paul's going to come in contact with, you know, from a horse side, that you can just pass mm-hmm. it on.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, do you have a horse program in New York?
It's not my program, but I'm involved with a couple different ones. Yeah,
I
do an equine immersion project in New Hampshire with someone you may know, Tara Mahoney. She's awesome, and mm-hmm. that's very focused on mental health, a lot of veterans, law enforcement. mm-hmm. things like that. Very mm-hmm. similar to Bravehearts, a little mm-hmm. bit different in scope and focus, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's awesome in its own way. We do Warrior Ranch on Long Island, and that's a rescue. So we rescue horses off the track, and we'll take wow. a racehorse, and we'll take a veteran, and we'll train the veteran how to train the racehorse, which is sort of a perfect fit. You know, racehorses can't race forever. Ranger can't ranger forever. You got to learn something besides shooting uh-huh. things and blowing things up, uh-huh. and you feel kind of useless. And through training these animals, you see, okay, there's more to it. There's more I can do. I'm not mm-hmm. as two-dimensional as I thought. And that's been extremely beneficial. Mm-hmm. We've expanded that to include a driving program. So we've got Robbie Siegelman from Siegelman Stables. He's one of the top harness trainers in the world. He won't say that, but his record will. He got us linked up with the Standard Bred Retirement Foundation and the Meadowlands, and they're supporting us. So we'll do a driving program, and we'll train veterans how to drive with a real racehorse in a real race cart. And then we'll go and lead the post parade at one of the tracks. We're doing the Meadowlands.
So, oh, wow.
Very yeah. cool. So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, we pick up our Standard Bred on Monday. Unfortunately, I can't be there, but I would rather be here hauling horses in New Jersey. So it's all good. And then also, I'm looking at a veteran Mustang mission in North Carolina mm-hmm. and ways to support them. Mm-hmm. So they're going to, same thing, you rescue a Mustang and you gentle it with a veteran and then see what you see.
Yeah. So, wow.
Yeah.
Which brings us around to the reason that you guys are in Fort Worth at the moment. So how about if you tell everyone what's going on here?
Well, we are here. We've got 16 veterans, mm-hmm. And we've got 16 of the top trainers in cutting, and we've got 16 of the, and I'm probably going to say their titles wrong here, but the junior youth champions, yes?
Junior and senior junior regional.
And youth. Senior, there you
There's
go.
16 of those, yes.
And we're all teamed up. So we've got one of the juniors or seniors, and we've got a veteran, and we've got a trainer, and we are going to go cut some cattle. And, most of us veterans, this will probably be like, our third or fourth time. Uh-huh. We were fortunate enough to go out to the Cowans in Ardmore, a month or so ago, yeah. and they were gracious enough to open up their beautiful, beautiful home. It was just, this is just amazing. Absolutely, bucket list, check it off. Like, never thought it was even going to be a possibility. But we are here to compete. Uh-huh. As much as we're all rooting for each other, we're all super competitive on the side.
It's a little trash talking going on.
A little bit of trash talking, but it's all in good faith. You know, we're just so thankful to be here. We really can't even wrap our brains around the fact that this is real.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that Oklahoma thing first, because I think it was one of the most amazing events I've ever been to.
Just to come together, everybody was, these trainers were just so, like, here's yeah. everything I know, here you go. Like, years of, hard work and dedication, and this is what they do, and they just instantly,
One-on-one,
we're yeah. like, hey, let's do this, yes, yeah. we're pumped to be here. Amazing people.
It was impressive and very humbling, the amount of generosity and mm-hmm. selflessness. And it's, I love to see it, because it's sort of, you take it for granted when you're in the military, because it's just the culture mm-hmm. of selfless service. Mm-hmm. And then you get out and you get a little bit jaded and cynical, because it's not that common. Mm-hmm. And then to see something like that, everybody coming together at the Cowans with Bravehearts, it was
just
awesome.
Opened up their home. You know what I mean? This yeah. is where they yeah. live. This is what they do. And
yeah.
there was mm-hmm. nothing that they, they were off limits or like mm-hmm. just more than happy to help. All of them, the entire family.
Well, the first morning of it was a 2-day clinic. Mm-hmm. And the first morning, Megan, who, by the way, Megan is the COO of Bravehearts. And she ask all of you to introduce yourselves however you wanted to and just to tell a little bit about your story. All of you were going around going, thank you so much to the trainers, and we're all going, are you kidding, thank you for all your service and keeping us safe and sharing your stories. And, you know, it was just the most amazing heart-opening experience. And also the trainers, we don't ever get to be together like that, you know, like just hanging out and seeing each other. And, you know, and a lot of trainers stopped by, that, and that was really fun. And so it was just really special, and all the trainers really helping all their people, and it was fun.
Yeah.
Like you said, humbling. I didn't realize the impact it was having on them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we were just so focused on what an awesome opportunity it was for us, and then to be able to, yes, we gave our story, but then they gave theirs. And to hear how all of you were just like, everybody had their own insight on it. And it was just, it was very humbling. It was humbling to hear, you know, everybody's story and just.
Well, nothing like that's ever really happened before, sounds like.
No.
So
not in the cutting world that I know of.
Kind of made history.
Yes.
Which is really cool to be a part of.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You guys are making history. Well, I think one of the things that I loved from the trainer's viewpoint is that we got to see you all, just we got to see the value of the horse for what they bring to our lives and how really blessed that we are to have them. Because when you're a professional trainer in a competitive sport, I mean, you love the horses or you wouldn't be doing it, right? Mm-hmm. But you, it's easy to lose sight of that tremendous wealth that they bring to your life. And also to realize that our clients, that's why they come and ride those horses. I mean, they want to win, but they come because they want that sense of community in a barn. They want that sense of connection with their horse. And so to hear some of the trainers, stand up and say, you know, I'm so grateful to have that renewed awareness and gratitude for the horse. I love that. That was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt, my trainer, Matt Miller, he said just that. We were sitting on the horse. He's like, you know, you forget because you're so busy and you're working so hard and you're competitive and focused. He's like, we could just come out here and see how much fun it really is. And he said the same thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that was cool. It was an awesome moment to share.
Yeah. So how about riding those horses? Let's talk about the riding challenges. What are the riding challenges that you see?
Challenges? I mean...
Oh, it's easy. No.
It's not easy. I mean, but like all the support that we were given, and I mean, These aren't like taking your mom's minivan out. This is like taking out, you know, I don't even know what car I would compare it to. You know, I mean, we said fancy, you know, sports cars and stuff, but
it's easy to look good. On
they make you look really good, right?
Yeah.
we were really impressed. You know, we talked amongst ourselves, and we were all really impressed with our horsemanship skills because we're like, oh my goodness! But we're like, okay, most of that was the
off.
Horse.
Yeah,
nobody fell off. That was the biggest year, right?
I was just happy I didn't look as inexperienced as I am.
Right.
You know? So, but I think that's when you have those kind of animals and those kind of trainers, you're going to perform much higher than expectations.
We were set up for success. We really were.
But it was. I mean, it was a whole new type of riding. I was sore in some ways that I didn't expect to be. And, you know, had some hairy moments that you're like, okay, this is... We're right at the edge of the envelope for me, which is, you know, child's play for, you know, a guy like Matt, of course. But that's why he's the pro. So,
Well, I don't think, let's see what you think about this idea. I don't think cutting horses are really that hard to ride because they stop on their, ones that stop on their hindquarters and move. But the movements are fast.
Yes.
But as you learn your seat and to keep your eyes on the cow and some of the basics of the line and that sort of thing, you know, once you get the hang of that and really focus on the cow, the horses are not that hard to ride. They look hard to ride, but because they're balanced on their hindquarters. They're not. Would you agree with that or no?
Yes, but I mean, so the first day I felt like, you know, like I felt like pretty confident. I was like, hey, this felt really good. I felt like I was really picking up on things. You know, feedback I was getting from my trainer, which was Miss Kara Brewer, you know, was all positive. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like I can actually do this. Like I got this. And then to come back the next day though, and to actually see, oh, okay, well, you know, you can screw these horses up. I mean, you really can. All the training that these guys have put into them, I mean, you guys have done the hard work. You guys really, I mean, these horses are trained so well. But, I mean, there's a lot to it. There really is. I mean, once you really break it all down about keeping your line and keeping the right distance and keeping focused on the cow and letting the cow move, then the horse move, then you move, and not trying to anticipate that, you know, the horses we have are incredible and amazing, but they're not trained in this specific discipline. So when we're practicing at home, we're having to physically make them do those pivots and make those turns. So we're like, oh, well, I need to do this. And I know that, you know, we have to refine those a little bit. So for me, that was a little bit, you know, of a challenge, just learning what to do and how to do it and not scratching that Lamborghini. You know?
My goal was not to fall out of the saddle and not to look stupid. And that was much easier than I expected it to be, but everything else,
mission accomplished.
Yeah. Mission accomplished. Uh-huh. Yep. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah. I think we all set our standards kind of low. We're like, hey, as long as we don't fall off, we're good.
Yeah. So we don't want to get really laughed at. Do want to get invited back.
Yes. And here we are. Here we are. And this is just going to be crazy. Absolutely insane.
Well, first of all, I don't think that there's no failure and there's no one would ever laugh at it, because first of all, everyone understands that you guys have had minimal experience. And also the cutting is what's called a soft skill sport, which means that everything's always changing. So you have to adjust. You know, it's not like you go out there and you ride a pattern, right? So that on its own is something that takes time. So, and especially in the herd, you know, the cattle are moving around you and you have to make a choice. You have to move with the cow. So you have to be kind to yourself as you're learning.
And the trainers did say that. They were gracious enough. The one day we had a few minutes before lunch and we just sat down and they're like, ask me any question you have. And that was the nice thing, is they just laid it out. They're like, anything that you think you're going to do, we've already done it. It's happened.
A thousand times.
Yes.
A thousand
and so times. That was nice to kind of hear. And just to kind of loop back to what you were saying about improvising, right, and adapting and overcome, I think that may be another reason why us as veterans are kind of connecting to this as well as we are, because that's your everyday life, adapt and overcome. You know, you don't know what situation's going to come up. You don't know what you're going to be thrown into. And you have to adapt and overcome. And there's no room for failure in that sense. Like, you got to make it happen.
Yeah. But it's also not so rigid either. Like you said, it's a soft skill. So it's not like, okay, I have to hit this pattern exactly. You have to take a set of skills and you have to accomplish an objective. And what happens in between, as long as it's safe and you don't get laughed at, then it's mission accomplished. But I think, like, you might agree, like, it feels good to be able to use those skills that we had in the military and that we relied upon, and you don't really use them in civilian life. So it's like, I still got it. It's still useful. I can apply it to this in another way. And it's like awakens a little part of you that you don't get to engage with every day.
Like, so what would that be? What are you referring to?
Well, like, so I was an Army Ranger, you know, so we might plan an operation where we're going to fast rope out of a helicopter and run down a bad guy, and then we're going to have a follow-on mission, and I've got to, you know, maneuver my two-man sniper element to support both of these things, and you have to be extremely flexible, and you don't know what's going to come up, so you're accounting for terrain and a risk assessment and weather factors and, you know, vehicles with your helicopters, and then you have to actually go and do it. So you're on the ground thinking on the fly, and it's so engaging and immersive of all your senses, and this is very similar to that for me. Mm-hmm. I'm the cows are real, the horse is real, the danger is real, you know, people are watching me, And the stakes aren't high in the sense that, you know, it's a special operations mission, but it matters, you know, and I want to look good and, you know, represent us well, but also, you know, have a good time and do what I'm supposed to do. And so you really have to have your head in the game, and I like it.
That's interesting. So it's really engaging all those skills.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We train and we prepare, we over-prepare for everything, and you try to think of every possible outcome. Yeah. But again, these are animals, so when we get into this situation, it's the same thing. You're like, oh, well, it didn't do what I wanted it to do, so okay, let me revert back to the way I've been trained. Okay, let's just adapt and let's figure it out. You know, so
and that's exactly what we're doing.
And that's exactly what we're doing.
Like, no plan survives first contact. It's a military axiom.
Yep.
And so, you know, you go into a
that's really interesting.
A herd of cattle, and it's you've got a plan, but it might that's just where you're going to start. It probably is not going to be where you finish. So,
That's so interesting. So, in the military, you just keep training in different what's the word I'm looking for?
I mean, whatever your job is. So I was in the medical field. I was a corpsman in the Navy. So I mean, I trained from a medical standpoint, you know, as where you as a Ranger, you've got these missions that, you know, you guys train for, and everyone has their specific job, and you train and you try to train for every possible, you know, we've got bags and carts ready for emergencies, because you never know what's going to walk through the door. You never know what's going to happen, but you prepare for all of them.
And you're expected to perform. When that millionth percentile scenario comes up, you've got to do it. I don't know if this is a good example, but like, okay, this guy has a rare parasite and he comes in and he's sick and it's emergency. Like, you got to do something. You got to be ready for that.
You got to figure it out. What do we do first?
Why and how and because it's so random. And same thing with any, you just plan for every single contingency as much as possible, because so much is on the line, you know.
So in the military, do you feel nervous?
Of course.
Yeah, but there's no time for that. Yeah. From a medical standpoint, like, I don't have time to think about my nerves. And like, you just do it. We train so much that you react. And that's the big difference, you know, between military and civilian, is you just react, because you've trained so much and so hard for every possible outcome that instantly those instincts kick in and you just react. And so it's just and it's an adrenaline rush, you know, afterwards. Then this is where you come down. And so this is where, you know, a lot of us struggle now, because of everything that we did then and every situation. You don't think about it at the moment because you don't have time. But then afterwards, you still carry that.
Yeah.
You know, you take that home with you.
Did you get nervous after the fact? I would get nervous after. Like, mission's over. We accomplished it as a success. And then 24 hours afterwards, I'm replaying it in my mind and going through all the anxiety and nervousness.
What did I do wrong? What could I have done better? Yeah.
Because you're there in the moment. You're seeing, like, all the close calls. And you're like, okay, I got lucky on that one. How did I mess up that decision? What happens next time if I'm not lucky? Does that mean that Mac takes one, you know, through the plates or not? So
there's a lot of heavy responsibility.
It's a lot.
So you're nervous. You're scared. If you meet a vet that says he wasn't nervous or scared, I'd have some questions for him. Yeah. But you don't show it. You don't have time for that.
But then we're not doing the work. And so this is where it brings, you know, to where veterans are once they get out. You had a job, and that's what kept you going. And then once you don't have a job, like these horses that are retired or, you know, whatever, they don't have that job. Now what do you do with yourself? Now your mind the mind is a powerful thing. Your mind starts to play tricks on you. Your mind starts to go one way or the other. And again, you replay that over and over and over and over in your head. And then this is, you know, where we break and we're looking for how do we fix that?
Yeah. Well, and you revert back to what you learned in the military, and military techniques aren't the best for civilian life. I did a remote wilderness first aid course, and we're talking about bleeding. If you're bleeding in Afghanistan, you're getting a tourniquet pretty much no matter what. Like, if you're bleeding enough that you got to see Doc or see me, like, I'm going to tourniquet you. We're going to get you out of there. And that's like the last thing you want to do. in a civilian situation, even if you're remote and you're in the wilderness. And so going through that course, I'm like, you know, this is a good analogy for how I problem solve. You know, stress will come up in a relationship, or it'll come up professionally, or it'll come up just in your daily life. And I'll deal with it as I would deal with stress in combat, which is survival. Bury the nervousness, bury the anxiety, nose to the grindstone, just
survival mode.
Get it done.
Just get it done.
Grit your teeth and get it done. And that, you don't have to do that.
Like, you mean in civilian life?
In civilian life. No, and it's actually detrimental. And that's, for me, that's what the horses do, is they pull me back in the moment here. And the horse is going to tell me what I'm bringing to the table that I'm not being honest about or open about. And then it kind of snaps me back into the mode and keeps me here instead of back there in Afghanistan.
That's just awesome to hear that. You know, I've never really heard such a detailed explanation.
I think that's probably, yeah, I mean, can't speak for everyone, but
I think that's,
it's pretty,
it's, yeah, it's kind of universal.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about a cutting horse is, because you put your hand down, there's a trust piece.
You have to trust.
Yeah.
You have to trust.
Yeah.
I think that's hard. That's hard for anyone learning initially. It's like you want to make sure that they turn.
Well, you want to control the moment. I mean, that's what you do, is you have to control the moment. You have to control the situation, you know, depending on what you did. I mean, but from a medical standpoint, if somebody doesn't take control of that situation, somebody's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, some people are the ones that step up and some are the ones that don't, but, you know.
See, I've always looked at it a little bit differently, because I learned about horses in the mountains of Virginia, and it was just, here's some moonshine, this is left and right, go up the mountain, come back down the mountain. It was very fast and loose. But I always took it, I was a young ranger. I went from civilian to Afghanistan, I think in 7.5 months. And I'm surrounded by guys that are, they're gods to me. They're gods among men. That's how I view Ranger Regiment. And I was lucky that I got to just walk the earth with them and be counted among their number. So it always gave me a sense of security and comfort when we were out on a mission and things were going sideways. These guys have been here. They've done that. These are the guys that movies and books and stories are made about. And they're looking after me because I'm the brand new guy that doesn't know what the heck he's doing. And I felt like that pretty quickly on a horse. Like, this animal, it's big, it's strong, it's the stuff of legends, and it doesn't want to die, and it doesn't want to get hurt, and it's going to try and stay upright. It's not going to hit a magic banana peel and just slip out from under me, and we're going to break our legs in the mountains. So it was, that was an easy bond for me to make, and I kind of feel like I have that with not every horse. there's some animals I'm like, that one's not for me. That's, you guys go ahead. But that's what I like about it. I'm like, this animal wants to do what it wants to do. And I'm on board with that.
See, and so I think, work through my trust issues in that aspect. So, you know, in the military, again, I felt like I had to take charge of a situation. I had to be confident in what I was doing. I had to be the one that knew what was going on. I wanted to know every possible outcome. And so I felt like I was a pretty confident person, you know, a wife and mother, and like everybody looks to me for the answers, and like, I'm confident, like I got this. But then I get on a horse, you know, and I'm riding, and Megan happened to be in town for something, and she's like, man, you're a good rider, but we got to work on that confidence. And I'm like, I really, like, I had to ponder with that. I was like, well, what does she mean? Like, I felt like I'm a pretty confident person.
You exude confidence, yeah.
Yeah.
When you're the kind of person, if we were in the same unit and I was your subordinate, I would always be looking up to you. You would be that person, like, okay, she's taking charge. She knows what she's doing. She's done the work. She's studied. We're going to be okay because I'm the new guy and I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
So
for
it's
Megan
interesting
to say that to me, I really had to reflect upon it. And I'm like, man, what does she mean? And when I was able to put down those walls and trust the horse and go, okay, I can't do this by myself. I can't drag everybody behind me. I can't pull this horse with me. I have to make this connection, put down those walls and go, okay, I trust you're going to take care of me. And I still struggle with that every time I get on a horse. It's something I have to go through my head and go, okay, we got this. Not I got this. We got this, and we're going to do this together. And so being able to ride these horses that are not our horses, that we don't have a bond with, that I don't get to go and love on and, you know, have multiple lessons on, you know, that's been a little bit of a struggle. Mm-hmm. But they're so well trained, and our trainers have so much support behind us. I feel like it's been a little bit easier. Yeah. But that's still something, you know, for me to put down that barrier. And it really was a kick in the teeth, you know, when she told me, you just need more confidence. I'm like, man, really? But that was something I didn't know about myself. You know what I mean? I really didn't realize I had that barrier up there. And that's helped me become a better person, to recognize that and to be aware of that. So something else I can thank the horse for.
See, for me, this is a perfect fit. Because Megan's like, these guys are the best in the world. I'm like, okay, I trust you.
I trust you.
Implicitly. And then you meet Matt, you see what he can do. And I'm like, all right, you know way more than I'm ever going to know about this. If you say, Paul, you're good on that horse, then I know I'm good on that horse. Uh-huh. And I'm just, as long as I don't screw up, we're going to be okay. Uh-huh. So it's like a
whole trust. You'll be okay. You'll be okay anyway. I think the measure, the ultimate measuring stick is going to be if you have a blast.
I don't know how you can't have a blast.
I was going to say, I just,
how this could not be fun.
Yeah.
Even if we go out there and completely blow the whole thing, like, not just possible. The experience, you know what I mean? Just the experience, this, being able to be a part of this, you know, hanging out with everybody at the hotel, like, everything, you know. I got up at 5 o'clock this morning to go feed. I love that. I'm sorry. Like, I didn't come here to sleep. I came here to work and learn as much as I can and have a great time, you know, with amazing people. So I don't want to waste a second of it.
That's what I told Megan for probably like the first year and a half that I knew her. She'd be like, oh, you can come out to this event. I'm like, cool. I'll just come and muck stalls and, you know, I don't know, drive lunches around, whatever you want. And she's like, no, you're going to be on a horse. You're going to be a part of it. I'm like, okay, that's cool. But I'm just happy to be here. Uh-huh. This is fun. You know, like, I'd buy tickets to come and watch this. So,
absolutely.
Well, then there's another factor, and that's the kids.
Yeah.
That's probably the part I'm maybe most nervous about. Just wanting to help them, I guess, understand, you know, a little more about military and a little bit more about veterans. And I mean, I want to learn from them. These kids have been doing this, you know, for years. This is what they do. This is their livelihood.
They're like the ski boarders on the mountains, right? They go around
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. So just, I mean, super excited to meet them. Honored that we were even asked to, you know, be partnered with them. You know, that's a big honor to be asked to be a part of this whole thing and to be, you know, I don't want to call it a mentor, but like, I feel like we're all mentoring each other. Uh-huh. You know, it's a big group of all of us together, but it's exciting. I'm so excited to meet my team and, but just a little nervous. I don't know what that expectation is. You know, I want to make sure we hold up our end of the deal. You know what I mean? Yeah, I guess that's where I'm at with it.
Same.
Yeah.
It's really, there's a lot of grace here that we're being shown, and I'm really, really thankful for it. I mean, it's, y'all are busy.
To get everybody here together, right?
Yeah.
You know? So it's really cool that they would take time out of their busy schedule to do this with us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the trainers already know that they would do they'll take whatever time. I mean, it's like it just went to the top of the priority list after Ardmore. But the kids, I think that's going to be interesting because, you know, we haven't met our teammates yet.
Yeah.
And I think that part will just, of course, be organic, right? Depending on their personalities and but just for them to have the experience, I think is fabulous. It's just a wonderful thing, the whole thing.
Yeah. I think so.
So excited. I mean, it's just beyond words.
I want to talk about the Bravehearts family a little bit, because when we were in, Ardmore first, and then we were in at Lachlan Perk's place. I know, Paul, you didn't get to come to that one, but when we did the introductions in the morning, we went around, and everybody talked about the Bravehearts family. Just talk about that a little bit.
It's a funny thing, because especially being an outsider, you're local, Amanda.
Right, so it's probably a little different for me.
Yeah, I'm sort of like the cousin that gets to come in for the reunions and the holidays. But it's, from the start, I always felt welcomed. And, but in a very military way, where it's like, okay, you're one of us, but let's see what you can do. You know, and you muck a few stalls and like, all right, this guy's okay.
And let's see how much weight you're going to pull around here.
Yeah, like, all right, you're in, you're good. But no, but I felt immediately welcomed. And you get to meet such interesting people and people that are motivated. I always, I think about Bill Mercurio at least a couple times a week, because he's very spiritual and he's very mindful. And, you know, he usually says our prayers to start our events and things like that. And so it's just a good example, you know, older veteran for me to look up to. And, you know, I like that I get to hang out with the old timers. And I'm sorry for calling you guys old timers.
I know, right?
But I don't know a better term. And
as he looks at me.
Oh, that's because I'm talking to you, Bob. And then, you know, you just meet, they're all interesting people. Uh-huh. And, you know, you can count on them. I talk to Victor every week because he's in California and I'm in New York. So it's sort of.
Yeah, you guys have that bond.
Yeah. It's like, all right, we're the guys in foreign territory.
Well, being local, I mean, I'm just blessed to be a part of it. So
you guys get to hang out. I'm jealous.
We do.
And you get to ride together.
We get to ride together.
You guys riding together. I'm jealous.
I mean, it's just amazing. It's even more than that. You know, it's my husband and I both being military. You know, we never lived really close to our families and our parents. And so we've always made our families, you know, with our friends.
Yeah.
And so Bravehearts, as soon as I started coming there, instantly, I mean, it's, as soon as you walk in the front door, there is somebody greeting you with a smile on their face, and they are just happy to be there. And everyone that works there does so much, and I am blessed enough to now call myself an even more part of that family. A position became available, and Megan offered me a position that I just couldn't turn down. As far as I'm concerned, this is my dream job. You know, we work for that great American dream, you know, of like never feeling like you work again, you know, again a day in your life. And I feel like this is that position for me. And so just on a whole nother level, that gets to allow me to give back even more. But like every single one of these people are so friendly. I don't care if it's the instructor. I don't care if it's the barn assistant. If it's just the volunteers, which we can't survive. We wouldn't be here without our volunteers, being that we're a non-for-profit organization. Every single one of them, every single one, I don't care, like, just, hey, how's it going? You know, how are you? Can I help you? Who, whatever it is, you know, without even knowing what your name is. So then once you actually get in there though, and you get to know these people and you know their stories and you get to talk to them and, you know, when you walk in and you go, they don't even have to say anything and you go, what's wrong? Because you could just tell they're not on today. That's, you don't get that everywhere, you know, you don't get that relationship. And so, yeah, being able to ride together and everything else. But being able to know you can count on those people, you know, that if you want to talk, you're there.
Well, that's our like horse community, like everybody with horses, they've got their go-to people that they're just going to call. And I might be in New York, but Bravehearts, they're in my circle of go-to people. Like if you're in a group and I need something, I know I can call you up and I'm going to get counsel or, you know, whatever I need.
Or someone to listen who cares.
Yeah.
Just a shoulder.
Who's there. Well, somebody's there.
That's the thing. It's family. What do you call family for?
Yeah.
And that's when I think, all right, I'm going through something. I need somebody to call. You know, I'm going to call Kyle or Victor or Bill or Amanda or Megan or somebody, you know.
And never
if I gotta
feel like you... There's no owing anybody. There's no.
No.
It's just family. I mean, there's no other word for it. It's family.
That's awesome. You know, most of us in the civilian world don't have that. You know, we have our families and our friends, and we hopefully where we keep our horses, if we keep them at a trainer's, it feels like that, but it doesn't always.
Yeah, it's rare. It's a rare thing.
Yeah, it is. So yeah. That's a huge blessing.
Yeah, we're very fortunate.
It is, and we're extremely fortunate. I think every single one of us, if you asked, they would say the same thing. That it's like, it's rare.
It's like a lifeline in the civilian world, right? I mean, the civilian world doesn't understand all the things your family at Brave Hearts understands, or the veterans.
Yeah. No, I feel very disconnected, and I think maybe you feel like this some, but I might feel it more because, and I think Victor does too, because we're so remote, and we're kind of in a place that's, well, I live in New York, not my favorite place to be because of it's New York, right? Use your imagination.
Are you talking about the city?
No, I'm in Long Island.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I could make it in the city, man. That place is, there's a lot of people there. It's crowded. That's busy. That's a wild place. Uh-huh. But it's culturally a lot different than what I'm used to, and travel stresses me out. So you know, these trips are hard for me to make. Mm-hmm. Leading up to it, once I'm on the plane, you know, the die's cast, I'm good to go. But I always feel so relieved when I'm back in the fold and I'm back with the Bravehearts, and then I go back and I'm refreshed and I'm rejuvenated. So it's crucial. I mean, it's just part of my life rhythm now.
It's like a nourishment.
Exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's so important. We all nourished by the nature of nourishment. We need it often. So.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, even being local, I mean, it's no comparison to the big gaps that you get.
But you need it sometimes.
But we do, and, you know, we run on like a 6 to 7 week schedule, and then we have a makeup week, and we have a blackout week where our horses, you know, aren't used at all, and they get a break, which they very much, you know, deserve. But then we all come back, and we're like, oh, my God, we missed everyone. We missed these horses. We missed seeing each other. Yeah. You know, I mean, before I even started working there, I mean, I was out there 3 days a week at least, and that's, you know, with working my full-time job and a family and, you know, most of the time bringing my kids with me. And but you look forward to that. Like, there's never a time where someone would call and be like, hey, can you do this? And, man, if I couldn't, it just breaks my heart. I'm like, I'm so sorry I can't be there. But otherwise, what do you need? What do you need me to do? Like, I live 3 minutes away from the one barn, and I'm like, if there's ever anything – just call me. I don't know if I can, you know, do all of it, but I will sure try. I mean, I'm right here, whatever I can do to help.
Yeah, and even being close. I mean, you can become remote. We like to isolate as veterans, so, you know, it's really nice to have that that place you can just plug in. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, back.
Well, yeah, and a lot of us still struggle. You know, there's still, you know, there's people that, you know, there's veterans that come out there, you know, when you don't see them for a few days, that's when you start to where you're like, normally you're here this day.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you didn't come for your session. And that's when we reach out and we're like, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, and Bravehearts themselves is great about that. I know Bill does a lot with that, with reaching out. And, you know, Nick is in charge of, you know, our veterans and making sure that they progress how they want to. And they will just reach out to you, text you, hey, what's going on? What, you know, what can I do to help? What do you need? You know, and so for those that have bad times and, you know, have bad moments, and you have good days and bad days like everybody else, but sometimes our bad days are really bad. And people, normal people, you know, civilian world would just, okay, somebody didn't show up for work, whatever, you know, just move on. But nobody does that. Nobody
or they would be afraid to hear it.
Yeah. Right. You know, maybe they don't want
to. It would scare them to hear it.
Yeah, no, somebody's always got your back.
Yeah, they're not going to let you have too many bad days string together. Everybody has them, but you know, you can tell.
And Megan will call you directly. You know, she's amazing like that. So, hey, how's it going? You know, even though as busy as her schedule is, it's never right
does
into business.
Sleep? Does she even sleep?
I don't. She's a machine. I don't know if she sleeps or eats, but she gives so much of herself. She really gives so much of herself, you know, that. But she always takes the time when you answer the phone, well, how's it going? How are you today? She checks in every single time. And it's appreciated.
Yes. So what's next for you guys?
Short term, like today?
No.
You know, never know.
Yeah.
You would never even think that this would have been next. You know, this was nowhere near. I just wanted to be an exercise rider. Like, hey, I just want to be able to come and ride by myself. Nobody talk to me. Nobody tell me anything. And Braveheart's there's always one step, you know, higher. Then it was, oh, Trail Zero. How cool. Yeah. And now, oh, you want to become an instructor? Hey, we can teach you. And then now, hey, you want to learn how to cut cattle?
Yeah.
What? Really? So the sky's the limit. I mean, do you got any ideas? Because we can totally throw them out to Megan and, you know, see what snowballs.
Well, and you're becoming the director of the volunteers?
Volunteer coordinator.
Volunteer coordinator.
Yeah, the current one that we have has some pretty big shoes. I've got to fill those shoes, but... She had an amazing opportunity to continue education, so can't blame her for that. And like I said, I'm just blessed to be a part of it, and anything I can do to pay it forward. Okay. Like I said, the Bravehearts, couldn't function without their volunteers. Mm-hmm. So I'm honored to be able to step into that role and. Make sure that we've got the volunteers that we need and educate them and do as much as I can. But on the same token, it's a little scary because, oh my God, you can't function without volunteers. What happens if I can't drop the ball? There's, uh-huh. there's, that's not an option.
Uh-huh. No, that's
I'm
like
sure you
the
won't.
Lifeblood.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Paul?
I'm working on my second book and working on a couple horse programs in the Northeast. And looking at a Mustang program in North Carolina that I am hopeful to be able to help out with and connect mm-hmm. with people like Bravehearts and stuff like that. I think I've been lucky. I'm kind of a nomad. I get to see a lot of different programs and get involved with them. Mm-hmm. And there's not as much unifying structure, I think, as there could be. We all don't communicate as well as we could. So I've been sort of like a little messenger back and forth, connecting the
cool.
dots. And that's really cool to be able to do uh-huh. and bring different ideas. My brother has an outfitter in Colorado. So he has, I'm going to get this wrong because he's been buying and selling horses. I think he has 14 animals, like 6 mules and the rest are horses. So I'm going to be helping him out
a little bit. Colorado?
Steamboat.
I was a ski bum there one time.
Really?
Yes.
That's good place to be a ski bum.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. I have a lot of good friends there who never left.
Yeah. So. It's an easy place to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he loves it. So I'll be up there with him and the kids and my sister-in-law. We're going to do some riding in September and a little bit of hunting. And
great.
You know, just see where we can do more of that together.
So tell us about your first book, and then I didn't know about the second book.
Well, I'm working on two for my second book, so I'll hold off on that.
Okay.
It just depends on which one inspires me more, and mm-hmm. I can actually get done.
Uh-huh.
But I'm getting pretty close. I'm about 50%.
Uh-huh.
So maybe next year.
Okay.
It'll be in print.
Obviously, you like to write.
I enjoy writing. Uh-huh. I do. Uh-huh. I do like writing. The business of writing is not as appealing to me, but I've got some good friends in that business, you know, other Rangers and military guys that have always helped me along the way. Mm-hmm. So shout out to those guys.
Mm-hmm.
My first book is called When the Killer Man Comes. Mm-hmm. And I was approached. It wasn't long after Chris Kyle had his great success and Nick Irving had his great success with their books. And Macmillan was looking for another super sniper story. Mm-hmm. And they thought, based on my military resume, that I fit the bill.
Mm-hmm.
I would disagree with them. So would a lot of the people I served with. But, you know, I had a few accolades. So whatever, I got the gig. I didn't want to write a super sniper story. That's just not... One, I wasn't that guy. And I don't think that's... That story's been told. And it's been told really, really well mm-hmm. by some amazing, amazing snipers mm-hmm. that I look up to. So, but I like Band of Brothers. I thought that show was awesome. What I didn't like about that show was that I didn't hear about these guys until they were in their 70s and 80s. And they didn't get any credit for what they did until they were in their 70s and 80s. And some of these guys lived really hard lives that wouldn't have been so hard if people had known who the hell they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, you know, friends who got out of Ranger Battalion, and they go out and they've got Ranger on their resume, and the guy they're sitting across from interviewing for a job is asking them which national park they worked at, which is
just, oh my gosh,
galling to no end. You know, if you're a Navy SEAL, you walk in with your sweet hair and you're like, I'm a SEAL, and nobody's like, which SeaWorld did you work at? They know exactly who you are, you know? Not that I'm jealous. So I saw it as an opportunity to write about the great things that, you know, the machine gunners do and the privates do and the team leaders do, you know, the guys that aren't as glamorized in the media like a sniper would be, but that, you know, were absolutely 100% responsible for me coming home alive, and who I just look up to. And hopefully, you know, if you're a Ranger and you got out, you know, people will know a little bit more about what you did because of the book that I wrote. And that's really what it is. It's my best effort to give credit where it's due to the guys that I served with.
Well, I can't wait to read it.
I can't wait to hear what you think.
I'm excited about it. I got my copy today. So, well, I'll be with you guys tomorrow. We have a clinic that's going to be really fun.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would encourage you, of course, you'll spend whatever time you'll spend with your trainer, but if you're not, to go and sit in the arena as close as you can and listen to the other trainers, coach the other veterans, just because it'll help you to internalize. Yeah. You know, it'll be a lot like Oklahoma, but it'll be easier to see up close and personal. And then we have the competition on Tuesday, so we're going to be together for the next couple of days. So
excited. This is going to be just epic.
That's awesome.
Well, I'm very grateful that you came, and you know, this cutting opportunity gave us this chance to be together. And I know your stories inspire people and open their hearts a little bit more to gratitude for horses.
Yeah.
Good.
Because that's the reason that we're with them, is because of what, you know, all that they do for us. So.
Yeah.
The amazing healing power of the horse.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's important. It's really, really important. I mean, but I think people don't realize that these animals still have a purpose in our modern times, and they absolutely do. Mm-hmm. And it would be a shame if that went all the way by the wayside. So I enjoy being able to show people what they can still do.
And the challenges.
Yeah.
Too. You know, you can't be just lackadaisical.
Oh, no. So, it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah. Well, here's all the best to both of you. And thanks again.
Thank you, Barb. Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
All of the veterans rode like champs in the NYCHA shootout. And our guy, Paul, scored a 216, an extremely good score. And Amanda marked a 223 and tied to win the go-round with Will Beckel, a fellow vet. And drum roll, Amanda's youth teammate, Lily LaRosse, won her go too, which made them the team champions of the entire competition. Now, how awesome is that? Congratulations to all the veterans, and thank you from all of us from the bottom of our hearts for your service. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Barbara Schulte Show. If you have enjoyed this episode, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Instagram to stay tuned for future episodes.